Hey everyone, this is Gary D'Amato, sports columnist with the Journal Sentinel, JS Online, and with me today is Matt Velasquez, beat writer for on our Milwaukee Bucks. Matt's getting ready to head for playoff game number one in Boston, hopping on a flight in a little bit here. So I think we should dive right into it, Matt, and talk about the playoffs. I wrote a column saying that basically we don't know what Bucks team is going to show up, but I also think this is a winnable playoff series. It's better than them facing the 1, 2, or 4 seed, in my opinion, or 1, 3, and 4 seed. So where do you see them right now heading into this postseason, their first with a chance to win their first playoff series in 17 years, Matt?
You know, I think that you're dead on with what you wrote in your column. I mean, trusting the Bucks has been difficult all season, but the playoffs are different, especially when you're going against a team like the Celtics that has the injury issues that they have. Obviously, Gordon Hayward, you know, didn't figure into this season at all, considering he got hurt 5 minutes into it. Kyrie Irving is out. Marcus Smart won't be back until Game 7, probably at the earliest. And so, you know, the Bucks are in a position where, you know, they're facing a Celtics team where at full strength, I don't think many people would be picking the Bucks. You know, even just having Irving back, I don't know if many people would be picking the Bucks. But with Irving out and with things as they are, you know, this is basically a coin flip. I know I've seen a few different Vegas lines for it, and the Celtics are favored, but only slightly. And so it's about as tight as a playoff series is going to come. So I think you're right. It's very winnable, and it's going to come down to, you know, execution and consistency, which throughout the season have been issues for the Bucks.
I see it going 6 games, maybe 7, and could go either way. Is that kind of how you're seeing it too?
Yeah. So today, you know, you'll see it on JS Online if you hear this podcast today on Saturday, or you'll see it online on Sunday in the Sunday paper as well. I did a little breakdown of the series, you know, looking at, you know, offense, defense, coaching, starters, and the bench, and kind of giving which team I thought had the advantage in each area, and then at the end I gave my pick, and in there I kind of explained that, you know, this series, like, it's a coin flip, anything can happen, you know. Yeah, I kind of laid out the kind of pros for each side, but at the end of the day, you know, I think that, you know, with the front end talent that the Bucks have, usually, you know, you try and look at, you know, which team has, you know, the best player and which team has the best starters, or the best, you know, 5-man unit that you know, you think can be most potent, especially at crunch time, and you kind of see how the chips fall with those guys on the court with your best players. And I think the Bucks, you know, with Irving out, have that talent. But I think it'll be a long series. I'm not expecting this to be done in 4 or 5. And my prediction, you know, officially, was Bucks in 7. Which obviously would require them to win Game 7 in Boston, with their backs against the wall. But, you know, as we've seen a couple different points this season, the Bucks have been okay against good teams with their backs against the wall. Not all the time, for sure, but when they've had losing streaks and they've needed to end them, they've been able to pivot and find ways to get the job done. I mean, they've never had a winning streak longer than 4 games, a losing streak longer than 4 games. They've been kind of dead even or close to it for most of the season. And, you know, when you're in the playoffs and you are able to play Giannis Antetokounmpo for 42, 43 or more minutes each game, and you're able to lean on your frontline guys, I think the Bucks have the advantage with those players, that top end talent, and that could be enough to kind of lead them to the next round.
Yeah, I wrote a line something like, the Bucks have had a maddening tendency at this season to play with their backs, as if their backs were against a beach hammock instead of against a wall, which, but as you say, this is a different animal entirely, the postseason, the playoffs. I just don't see them, you know, having 5 and 6 and 7 minute lapses where they're just kind of wandering around the court aimlessly. You'd like to think they're going to be dialed in as, you know, as good as they have been at any point this season. But I guess the question is, can they do that for 48 minutes for, you know, at least 4 games and probably 6 or 7, definitely more than 4 games, I think. That's the big question, and we're going to see it answered very quickly here. I want to talk about Eric Bledsoe for just 1 minute. Matt, you wrote a really nice piece on him back in the playoffs for the first time since 2013 and starting this time instead of coming off the bench. I think it's interesting that I think he was asked a question along the lines of yesterday after practice if he was looking forward to sort of making a name for himself or proving something, and he just kind of smiled and said, "We'll see." And I take that to mean he is really ready for the playoffs and to shine on this stage. What do you think about his readiness and how he's played lately?
Yeah, I think he's definitely ready. I think, you know, just look at the way he's played over the course of his time with the Bucks. You know, he comes in, they immediately have a 4-game win streak, but then they start to, you know, kind of fall back to even a little bit as they have to work out how to play together and how to fit in together and exactly what their chemistry is going to be. And they have issues where, you know, it's very obvious, and it's happened not just at the beginning of Bledsoe's time in Milwaukee, but, you know, over the course of the past few months, where, you know, Bledsoe and Chris Middleton and Giannis, they'll ostensibly be taking turns on offense as to who's going to play ISO ball and who's going to dominate and who's going to try and force the issue. And that's not the best move for the Bucks. I mean, the Bucks need to be moving the ball, taking advantage of double teams and mismatches, and just swinging around, getting the best open shots they can. I mean, that's, you know, the way that you play the most efficient, effective offense. You know, Bledsoe had an interesting comment where he said that when he first got to Milwaukee, you know, he was trying not to step on anybody's toes. He didn't want to make any issues, make any big waves. He wanted to, you know, be sure that he was doing what he was supposed to be doing and fitting in, and while still affecting the team, but, you know, he was kind of still filling things out. But then he also kind of realized, hey, like, they traded for me for a reason. They want me to be me. They want me to do what I do and trust me to make those decisions. And over, the past 25 games since the All-Star break, he's been great. You look at his numbers are essentially up across the board. One of the numbers that is down is his usage percentage. It went down about 2% or so, 2 or 3%. And so he's using the ball less. But he's much more efficient with his shots. His assists are up, his scoring's up, his steals are up, his rebounds are up. Everything he's doing has gotten better, and he's been more patient. He's been knocking down his open shots. He knows which shots, you know, basically these catch and shoots that he can just hoist from basically extended around the arc, around the elbow, or some players call it the slot. Yeah, he can make those shots in rhythm. He's not forcing them. He has, you know, been effective at driving the lane and finishing, drawing fouls and kicking out. And then you watch him the fourth quarter of multiple recent games, and he's been great at clutch time. You know, the ball has been in his hands, and he's distributed it well. He's scored well. Obviously, the 39-point game he had against the Lakers, including a 9-0 run in overtime by himself to start that extra period, you know, that definitely stands out among his, you know, his great games of the season. And so everything he's done has been building towards this point of getting back to the playoffs. And because, as you mentioned, you know, he's been out since 2013. He spent 4 years in Phoenix, and that first year he was in Phoenix, they had 48 wins. That was a great up-and-coming, unexpected, successful team. But as the way the West shook out that year, they were one game short of the playoffs, and so he didn't go to the playoffs. And then after that, you know, the Suns started trading off some pieces. They changed coaches over the next couple of years. They had changes in their front office. They fully embraced a tanking mentality, or, you know, the team would term it a rebuilding mentality. You know, but they embraced that. They went young, and now suddenly Bledsoe's there, and he's kind of stuck, you know, with this team that's not going anywhere soon. And then last year he had arguably his best season, his best full season, and then with a month left they shut him down. And they called it left knee soreness, and he didn't want to be shut down. He wanted to keep playing. But that wasn't going to help them, because, you know, what they needed at that point, since they were already out of the playoffs, was more losses. They didn't need guys to go out there and be competitive. They needed to lose more and get a better draft pick to bring in better players to put around Devin Booker. And so that's ultimately, as we all know, that's eventually what led him to Milwaukee. And now he's a trusted, you know, effective, efficient member of the Bucks. And if he can, and obviously his, you know, 2 steals a game average, at the front of the defense helps set the tone. The Bucks count on him for that. And you know, they're definitely going to be riding with him, at crunch time, you know, along with Giannis, and to some extent, Chris Middleton, Jabari Parker. And he's got a big role. And so this is the dream. He told us, yesterday at practice that, you know, in past years, he'd be one of those guys at home around this time, you know, planning out a vacation with his wife and kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, you know, that vacation has absolutely no place in his thoughts. You know, he's competing for everything he wanted to. You know, he believes his team can compete in the playoffs and advance. And so, you know, we'll have to see if he's the missing piece. And interestingly enough, you know, I talked to General Manager John Horst yesterday because the Bucks lost their tiebreaker with the Miami Heat, which meant they actually kept the rights to their first round pick.
Yeah, that's weird. It doesn't sound like they should keep it if they lose the tiebreaker, but it worked out well for them.
It worked out perfectly. The pick was protected for picks 11 through 6, or it would go to Phoenix if it fell between 11 and 16 and protected 17 to 30. And because they lost the tiebreaker, the Heat got 16, the Bucks got 17. They keep the pick. But Horst, you know, he mentioned that, you know, they knew that the cost of doing business to get Eric Bledsoe involved giving up a first-round pick. At some point, their first-round pick will go to Phoenix. You know,
yeah.
And even knowing that, they're still extremely happy with the way the trade worked out. They believe that Bledsoe has been everything they wanted him to be. He's a key contributor. And he's been... he's only getting better as the season's gone on, heading into the playoffs, and so they're happy with that. But they're also happy to have that asset for another year before they, you know, would have to possibly give it up next year or the year after, depending on all the protections that are on it. So the team's definitely confident in Bledsoe. You know, from the front office, to the coaching staff, to the players, multiple guys have voiced a lot of faith in him. Over, you know, the past few weeks, you know, basically since he got there, really, but especially so over the past few weeks. And especially considering, you know, that his counterpart on Boston, Kyrie Irving, considering he's not going to be part of this series, that kind of puts Bledsoe in a position where, you know, he could and should have the advantage over Terry Rozier. And we'll have to see how much he could take advantage of that and how much of a boon that could be for the Bucks, especially at that position.
So Dele and Brogdon go down a while back, and the Bucks have to sign Brandon Jennings to a couple 10 days, and then they sign him for the rest of the season to back up Bledsoe. So now Dele and Brogdon are back. They've gone from being sort of guard poor, at least backup guard poor for a while, to suddenly being guard rich. How do you see the rotation working in the playoffs? Who's going to get minutes? Does it depend on matchups? Does it depend on hot hand? Does it depend on chemistry, guys playing together? How do you see that sorting itself out in the playoffs?
You know, I think, obviously we know Giannis is going to get 40-some-odd minutes every game. You know, that's locked in. And the fact that he's going to get that many minutes while you also want to get Jabari Parker in the game, you know, that could lead to the Bucks playing either Giannis at the 4, Jabari at the 3, or vice versa, or Giannis moving to the center position in certain lineups so that Jabari can come in and then maybe John Henson goes out. So we'll have to see how Joe Prunty decides to play that. But you would expect, you know, Giannis will get 40 plus. Middleton's got 40 plus, like, you know, 30 some odd, you know, all year. He was second in the league in total minutes behind only LeBron.
Right.
So he's going to get minutes. I mean, they trust him. They know what he can do at both ends. And then Bledsoe obviously is going to get some big minutes. The other two spots in the starting lineup are more questionable. Joe Prunty's been going with Tony Snell as a starter, you know, because of his, you know, matchup ability, and versatility on defense, along with his 3-point shooting, though Snell's been in a slump for a little while recently. Getting him back going, would be huge for the Bucks, especially considering the Celtics, gave up the lowest 3-point percentage to their opponents this season at 33.9%, which obviously some of that is luck, but when you do it over the course of a season, I feel like the luck factor goes down. It's just something you do. You can test, you run guys off the line, you bait them into, you know, quick trigger shots that maybe aren't the best, and things like that. But Snell, if he's struggling at all, or, you know, if he's not effective, obviously you have then Brogdon, you have Parker, you have Dele, Shabazz Muhammad, you have all these different guys that you can bring in. It's Sterling Brown, all these guys that you can bring in at that two guard spot, or even, you know, say, you know, maybe even a three guard spot, whatever you want to call it. You know, basketball's positionless now, Gary, you know that.
Right.
But you can, right, you can bring anybody in for Snell, and they have that depth. I would expect that Brogdon would be able to get a good number of minutes if he's back to the form that we would expect him to be at, and if he can get back into that rhythm and build that chemistry with his teammates quickly, if he can be effective, because of what he can do on the defensive end, in terms of matching up and playing, you know, tough defense. There's never been a question with his effort. Sometimes his, you know, things like lateral quickness and things like that might be questioned with him, but I don't think his effort is ever questioned. You know, I hesitate to assume that Brandon Jennings will get much run. Obviously the rotation usually tightens during the playoffs, and when you have options like Brogdon and Dellavedova, especially with Dele being somebody who's, you know, played at the highest level before and won at the highest level before, and he's somebody who everyone looks to as a veteran leader, especially during playoff times because he's been there before. Jennings just might not have, he might be knocked so far down the rotation that it'll be hard to find him minutes, because I doubt the Bucks go further than, you know, 9, maybe 10 deep in any of these games, you know, barring a blowout. And obviously, you know, it's nice to be healthy, but now when you are healthy, you have to figure out who you're gonna leave inactive. And so you have 13 guys that can be active and 2 need to be inactive. I would assume one of those inactives would be DJ Wilson. He's been inactive for most of the season, and he really doesn't have a place in the rotation at all. So that's one. But then the question is, you know, who's that second guy who you're going to say, you know, and obviously can change each game, but who's that second guy? You know, could it be Brandon Jennings, you know, for some games, just because, you know, they have so much depth at that 1-2 guard position that there's just not going to be enough room for him. He doesn't offer enough of a different look from other guys that they think he'd be effective. You know, could it be Shabazz Muhammad? Could it be Thon Maker? I mean, if they don't think that Thon could be impactful, if they think that, you know, they just need to have 2 bigs, you know, they just need to maybe use Henson and Zeller, and that Thon might not be that guy. I don't think so. I think Thon would probably be active for the whole series, just, you know, in case, because of his 3-point shooting and his motor. But you never know. These are tough decisions for Joe Prunty as to how he wants to handle each game and how he wants to handle his rotation. He loves to say that everyone needs to be ready. I think it's the thing that he's said the most since he jumped into the head coach position a couple months ago. But he definitely is in a position that I think he, as hard as it is, I think he enjoys the position he's in because he has all the options at his disposal.
That, you know, you mentioned Joe. Let's talk about Joe Prunty for a second, Matt. He's, you've been around him for 2 seasons now. He's, or even more, because you helped old Charles Gardner, you know, before he took the beat over full time. He's been a head coach basically now with the Bucks for 3 months. I like him. I think he's a smart guy. He definitely has a good basketball pedigree. but I think it's probably safe to assume if he doesn't win a playoff series, it'd be tough to bring him back as head coach. But what if he does, you know, what if he does go into the second round, or, you know, heaven forbid, even, you know, goes farther than that? What do you like about him, and what do you think his chances are to be back next year on the number one seat on the Bucks bench?
You know, I think the one thing that everybody would point to with Joe Prunty is that he works incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. Every person we've talked to, every person who knows him, just says he's very meticulous. You know, he doesn't let anything, you know, get past him. You see him in the locker room writing things on the board, just to make sure everybody knows the game plan and knows what they're trying to do. You know, he eats, sleeps, and breathes basketball, so he's trying to get the guys ready as best he can and cover all his bases. You know, and while he's a new head coach. You know, you mentioned he has a pretty good pedigree. I mean, he's been in the league for 22 years. He was he's been in the playoffs about 17 times as an assistant, or you know, while on a staff for a different team, or even the Bucks too. He's been part of the playoff run since Jason Kidd got there. You know, and he's won two championships with the 03 Spurs and the 05 Spurs as an assistant coach. So he's been around the block. He knows what the playoffs are like. You know, but so far, you know, since he took over, the Bucks, you know, they have a winning record. That's true. But there haven't been hugely significant changes, to fully tap into the potential of this lineup. And the overwhelming expectation is that, you know, when the Bucks, you know, the Bucks obviously have said many times publicly, that they're not conducting a search. They're not actively searching for a head coach. They have a head coach. And, John Horst told me back in January that they're going to be true to Joe Prunty. They told him this is his team, you know, all the way to the end of the season. And so whether that is at the end of the first round, second round, anytime after that, he's not going anywhere. And obviously now, you know, things start to get a little complicated as other teams around the league have fired head coaches and are starting to conduct their searches, you know, teams that are out of the playoff picture. And, mm-hmm. you know, you hear names of, you know, like, you know, from Atlanta, yeah, Coach Budenholzer, he's, you know, the Hawks gave consent to allow him to go interview in Phoenix. And so, you know, the coaching carousel is moving, but the Bucks, you know, they are firm in what they have said they're going to do. That, you know, obviously, like any business, especially a business that is in demand, you know, they're gonna receive interest. You know, people are going to send them, you know, if there's an opening or a possible opening at a company, people send resumes, people who are interested, people who want to be there, you know, and that's what your HR department does at any company. They take in the resumes, they look them over, they file them, and they say, okay, thank you, we'll consider this. You know, that's not an active search. That's just, you know, keeping an open door and keeping options open. And that's what the Bucks, you know, they've been doing. I mean, we know that, you know, this is going to be a coveted job if and when it comes open. You know, because of the talent that they have and the new arena and, you know, just the ability to coach a ready-made playoff team with a top-five superstar. So, you know.
Who wouldn't want that, right?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it's a low-risk proposition in the sense that you're not being asked to, you know, take a team from the depths of the standings and build something out of nothing. Like, you're trying to take something that's already there and just kind of mold it and shape it, you know, into what everyone believes it can be. And so, you know, I think that, you know, with Joe Prunty, I mean, if they go deeper into the playoffs, obviously that delays any type of coaching search, you know, for as long as they're in the playoffs, which, you know, you also wonder if the coaching market stalls out, because coaches might be waiting for a chance at interviewing with the Bucks. You know, if you're a coach and, you know, say you're a Mike Budenholzer, for example, you know, you might be like, well, you know, the Suns are interesting and they're offering me this, but like, I kind of be interested in hearing what the Bucks have, you know, that, you know, so, you know, or maybe, you know, there are back channels and, you know, behind the scenes things where it's like, okay, well, you probably wouldn't get this, or you would, or maybe if we don't know. I mean, those things aren't going to see the light of day. You know, so I'm interested to see how all that continues to progress. I don't think the chances are high for Joe Prunty to stay. I think that he is well respected on the team and, you know, in the league. But when you're in the position like the Bucks are, where you need to hit a home run with your next coach, you need to, you know, maximize this talent. You need to demonstrate to your fans and to your players, you know, including Giannis, that they have the capability of winning at the highest levels. You need to get somebody who can do that. And, you know, at the very least, you need to open up a real search, you know, and you can include Joe Prunty's name in that search. Let him apply for the long-term job just like everyone else. But you have to at least open it up to see what kind of interest and what kind of people, come your way, and figure out, you know, okay, what pool do we have to choose from? Because I think that's the most sensible thing to do.
Absolutely, you're right about that. Just before we let you go, I know you've got a flight to catch, Matt, but let's touch on Jabari Parker just for a second. He did a radio interview the other day and said some really interesting things about contracts and his fit in Milwaukee. I don't think there's any doubt that he wants to be in Milwaukee. He's said it all along that he loves Milwaukee, wants to be here. The question is, will he be here? Apparently, a contract offer was made, it sounds like, and not close to what he was hoping for or wanting. Where do you see him fit? I mean, he was going to be the man when they drafted him, and because of injuries and because of Giannis's progression and what he's become, Giannis is the man, and can Jabari be a number two for a number of years in Milwaukee? Is he going to be happy doing that? Where do you see him going from here?
You know, I think it's all very interesting. Because obviously the first report, I believe it was from Zach Lowe from ESPN back in February, was that the Bucks had been prepared to offer him 3 years, $54 million, back this fall during the window where he could be extended. So obviously people run with that and go with that. But the verbiage of being prepared to offer doesn't necessarily mean that was offered. You know, we're not privy to the offers or the discussions that happened between Jabari's representative, Mark Bartelstein, and the Bucks. You know, so we don't know exactly what happened. You know, at the time, I know I talked to Mark Bartelstein. I've talked to members of the Bucks front office, and everyone said that they wish they could come to an agreement. But both sides, had very positive talks. They were amicable, and that they'll continue to work together. And the Bucks still continue to value Jabari Parker, and they want to find a way to keep him in Milwaukee. But you wonder, where the hang up was. Because obviously in multiple talks with Jabari this season, it seemed like things weren't as perfect and amicable as, as the Bucks and as well as his agent as well, like, made them, look. He said multiple times, to me, and I've written this before, that, that contract extension period was difficult for him. And he didn't necessarily feel the love. He didn't necessarily, feel like things were going the way he wanted them to. And you're right. Like, when they drafted him, like, Giannis wasn't Giannis yet. Like, he was still, a rising player in the league. He wasn't anywhere close to an all-star game at that point. He was still he was just a ball of potential still. And Jabari was supposed to come in, number two draft pick, supposed to come in and immediately have an effect, be the man. And he and Giannis were the two guys that the team was building around. Like, that was them. And then Jabari gets hurt. Giannis makes this meteoric rise to becoming one of the best players in the NBA. Jabari gets hurt again. Giannis is still on the way up. I mean, I don't know when Giannis will stop being on the way up. And it's a very different atmosphere than what he might have expected. And, he was asked on this Milwaukee Basketball Hour the other day, about his contract situation. And he's like, okay. Like, and the lead into this was, just one of the hosts saying that, restricted free agency doesn't seem very fair, for a player, just because, the team can, the player has no choice of what happens, and the team can let it go to market. If the market dictates that this player's not going to get paid very much, then they don't get paid very much. If someone makes an offer that, the team can choose to match it, and then you're back at a team that maybe, just wanted to get you for bottom dollar or anything like that. And, Jabari basically said that, they have to be professional, they have to do their thing. It's a business. And he said that he knows that Milwaukee's not a huge target for free agents, and he was willing to take that into consideration. He's made it home. And he said, this is a quote here. He said, "When it comes to a player like myself, I wasn't desiring the max. I just wanted security. That's all I wanted. But then I got an offer that was not what I wanted. It was not fair." And so then, there was some conversation in there, and they asked, "Hey, look, like, he has been reported, that they'd offer 3 years, $54 million. That's like $18 million a year." And Parker's response was, "Shoot, I wish."
Yeah.
And so, so it'll be interesting because, maybe, maybe that offer was never made. Maybe, you know, you don't doubt Zach Lowe's reporting. He's one of the best reporters that the NBA has. And so maybe they were prepared to make that offer, but for whatever reason, that offer was not made. We don't know exactly everything about those discussions. And so on Jabari's end, he's like, hey, they never offered me that. So, you know, it's kind of a tangled web, and it's going to be a story or storyline that we're following into this summer, all during free agency, until there finally comes a resolution. And I think once there's a resolution to the situation, whether Jabari's in Milwaukee or not, which, again, you know, everything I've heard indicates that the team has a definite interest in keeping him and re-signing him. But, you know, that'll come down to the dollars and cents of it all over the course of free agency and how they can make that work with their roster. You know, but we're going to be following this for a while. This isn't going away. And maybe once it gets resolved, maybe we'll start to get some light shed on a few of the behind-the-scenes aspects that have been, you know, that obviously at this point it's not necessarily you know, beneficial for either side to talk about.
Yeah, sorry, Matt. No off season for you.
Yeah,
stuff to follow this summer.
Yeah, we got possibly a new coach. We got the new arena. We got Jabari's free agency, and now the Bucks have a draft pick. So I guess I have to pay attention to the draft now.
Just a couple things. Don't plan on a 10-week vacation. Let's put it that way.
Well, I've got a 1-week vacation planned, and I'm talking to some talking to Eric Name of ESPN Milwaukee yesterday. It's like, oh yeah, 100%. Whatever's going to happen, the biggest thing that can happen, it's going to happen while I'm gone.
Of course.
That's just how it works. You try and plan it the best you can. Try to plan for a time that's kind of out of the way, that isn't during summer league, not early in free agency, and. Yeah, whatever. It's just going to be what it is, and that's kind of what we sign up for in covering sports. Right, Gary?
That's right. You got it. Hey, Matt, great talking to you as always. I know you've got to pack and catch a flight. Looking forward to this series, and I'll be at all the home games with you. No deadline pressure tomorrow, noon game, right? So should be good. And looking forward to your coverage and joining you at the home games.
All right, yeah, looking forward to that, Gary. And for everybody else, you can definitely keep up with, you know, all our podcasts, all our coverage of the playoffs and beyond into this summer. It's all at jsonline.com/bucks. And when it comes to the podcast, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, basically anywhere you get podcasts. So we appreciate you all following along so far this season. We hope to get at least another podcast going during this series. We'll see how long the playoff goes to determine how many more podcasts we do. But until the next time, thanks for listening.